The information provided on this podcast does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. Listeners should contact their attorney to obtain advice with respect to any particular legal matter.
Welcome to Pacifica Issues Podcast, our take on legal issues in the Pacifica community. We are the co-hosts. My name is Leo Malfosio.
And my name is Ruby Fanaika Fangao. Pacifica Issues Podcast welcomes monthly contributions. Donors will receive special mention in future episodes. We invite sponsors to contact us if they'd like to partner on our future episodes. We also invite listeners to visit our Facebook page, Pacifica Issues Podcast, and comment below each episode to continue the conversation. Feel free to share our episodes on your platforms and help us raise awareness on Pacifica issues. In our previous episodes, you heard Pacifica Issues Podcast interview Herman Wangai, West Papuan freedom fighter. Now you'll hear us connect the dots between West Papua, Pacifica issues, and the law. This is part two. This story actually reminded me of the Fijian coup of 1987 when they had to overthrow the Indian elected president. So it was a non-Indigenous president. And this has, I know we bring up discrimination, but mainly what I feel our team is concerned about is sovereignty. So the people who possess Fiji are Fijian Indigenous. So understandably, they want the leadership to also reflect their interests. And the only way that could be done is if it's a Fijian Indigenous person. Right. So they did do that. They stormed the castle. But the difference between what happened in Fiji and what's happening in West Papua is the West Papuans, it seems that they are taking a nonviolent resistance. And Fijians, they took a violent resistance. And the thought crossed my mind as I was listening to our brother Herman talk about his plight. I kept thinking, I don't know how you can do this without violence. And I'm not an advocate of violence, but, you know, just on the outside looking in, when it comes to political changes, you know, it sounds like there are times where violence is required. Now, in this situation with West Papua, we're not just dealing with a sovereignty movement. We're also dealing with a genocide. So while the indigenous people are practicing a non-violent resistance, they're being violently subjugated. They're being raped, tortured, beaten, killed daily. And yet their response is in a nonviolent way. And of course, you know, we're Christians, we're Pacific people, we're very peaceful. But at the same time, you know, even within our Pacific context, you know, we have instances where we have had to use force to prevent our own deaths. We had to use force to prevent our own extinction, and we had to use force to prevent the taking of our land and prevent the taking of our resources. So it's just, you know, an afterthought or kind of a thought that I had even during our talk.
If I were to look into this, and I'm an attorney looking into this, I'd have to, first of all, look at some of the laws that were initiated this. You have to trace it back to when it first started back in 1898, when the Netherlands colonized West Papua. Mm-hmm. And then you also want to look at, you know, some of the main laws, the main mandated laws that were introduced back then. You look at the what you call that? What was the law that was initiated back then? The New York Agreement. You look at the New York Agreement of 1962. You look at the Act of Free Choice in 1969, and then you look at the Act of Free Choice of 1969 was essentially this so-called quote unquote referendum, right? And then you also need to look at the Special Autonomy Law of 2001, you look at the special autonomy law of 2001. And then the 2014, there was another law. One has to look at these laws. And so that's the only way to make a legitimate point, because if you come in from a different perspective of, you know, this is what we're wanting our freedom and whatnot, that's more so of a civil, intention. Whereas if you look at from that point, if I was in the United Nations, I would really assess the laws that were enacted back then and see, because that's the only way. Because if you want to play the other way around, it you wouldn't win from that situation. Because if you want to get down to the crux of things, and we talked about it, was, you know, this economic, they don't want to get to that point. That's even more of, you get down to that point, it's more so, it's a lot more complicated, and it's going to be a lot of people involved. Yes. And you and I had talked about this. It's a lot more quote unquote scarier than taking this approach. Whereas if you go to the United Nations, appeal to the United Nations and see that there's human rights violations, right? You come in from that perspective. But if, you know, and then if you can kind of hit the reason why some of these countries are in Indonesia, then. But it's like, again,
I also think specific representation, like, I know that we have indigenous people coming to United Nations, but I bet we need Pacific international lawyers, international law attorneys to sit with the West Papuans. There's something about, but as you mentioned, we have to use the law to make change. But what we also need are legal technicians. Unfortunately, I mean, in a fair world, you wouldn't even need a technician. The law and the truth should be enough. But no, it takes a technician, it takes a legal mind to make the case for the indigenous people, because the indigenous people will bring the facts, but it'll be the legal minds that connect the dots between facts and the reasoning of why West Papua needs to have their sovereignty recognized. Unfortunately, right, annually they've been doing, as you have explained, with pointing to these laws. Herman was laying them out immediately in our talk, but I think that's what was shocking to me. He was laying them out, and I know he's not the only one, and yet there's no, they're not being included in the United Nations agenda annually, and it makes me think that they need a legal technician to bend the ear of the organization, yeah, which is shocking. It's shocking and unfair to think about. You know, it should be enough that the indigenous people are bringing testimony and evidence, and they're it sounds like they have a good number of people that show up with them, along with they're bringing millions of signatures this year. And they did so last year, but again, you know, millions of signatures, and they're not just any signatures. They brought millions of signatures of the indigenous people of West Papua to show that the will of the people is sovereignty.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just one of those things where, because if you look at from their perspective too, they figured, you know, they've, you know, to their thinking, their mind is, you know, we've invested a lot in this,
yeah,
even though it's illegal what we did. And so the understanding is that we ought to get something out of it is what I'm thinking.
Oh, the stakeholders in the gold mine.
Yeah. And yeah. So
that's right. I mean, that's from the opposing point of view. That's exactly it. And that's part of our analysis, is weighing both issues. That's exactly what they're considering.
Yeah, I mean, that's really their motive of being there. They play around with these sub issues and these issues, and it's sort of like third issues, but they really have to, it really has to get to the point. They're not getting to the point, and that's, the media has played around with that. They've been playing in circles around this issue. We really need to get down to the crux of it, and I think that's the crux of it. what is the motive of these countries being there? What is the benefit? You know, essentially, what are they benefiting from being there, even though that they're doing it illegally? From the sound of it, I mean, even he confessed to some of the killings and some of the mm-hmm. the violence that was going on. Mm-hmm. But that is really the crux of what's going on. It's, and you know, these economic greed. Interests. Yeah, it's greed.
It's unfortunate, but it's a very familiar story for Pacific nations.
It really is. I just pray for this to come to you know, to a solution or something where, you know, the people of West Papua is finally getting what they've been asking for. And I think even he mentioned it. You know, like, we never got the promise that the Dutch government, because when the Dutch government left in 1962, they gave over the control to Indonesia with the explanation to the government of Indonesia that at some point you're gonna get to give up the island, you know, the country of West Papua. Now, but they had that never happened, is what he said.
And that's shocking. It's shocking that these agreements are being made, sheets of paper are being signed, and it's not being, they're not bound by it. I think that's what's shocking, is that only are they not enforcing it, they're not bound by these agreements, their own agreements. They're drafting these agreements.
Right. And so that's what I, you know, going back to what I said about these laws that were initiated initially when these governments were having some sort of association with each other, you look at these contracts, it's really an issue of breach of contract.
Yes, exactly.
It's, you know, something was promised and it was never, it never happened. So, and I think that should be brought to the attention of, you know, of the United Nations.
Yes.
Is it going to happen? You know, I hope so. And I think they're doing the right thing by being in Washington, D.C. and lobbying the U.S. Congress. I think it's one of those issues where it's going to be, you know, continued on.
Yeah. And I like that he pointed out that the USA is doing some support. The U.S. has already recognized the human rights violations happening in West Papua. But as Herman Wangai was explaining, we need more congressman support, which is very interesting. So that's a very specific way that the U.S. can help. And it's through us writing letters to our U.S. representatives. And it sounds like some Pacific nations are speaking up on behalf of West Papua. And my hope is that all of the Pacific nations, all of Pacifica, will agree that this terrible tragedy needs to end and that sovereignty needs to start, sovereignty for the West Papuans.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's just one of those issues where he talked about this special autonomy law, and I think I sort of mentioned it too. This special autonomy law was essentially an act by the Indonesian government to, it's kind of like a constitution where they created to, quote unquote, help the welfare of the people of West Papua. You know, of course, they're finding out that it's not really helping them out, that it's really just another trick to suppress the idea of independence.
I hope that it could be solved sooner than later with the right strategy. As you mentioned, they're doing a great strategy. They're a nonviolent resistance. They're calling in alliances. They're getting support from other people and nations, and they're going to the United Nations because this is an international topic. But I do believe that if they could just get, you know, the right representative to come with them, or the right strategy on how to wake the international community up, that would be really helpful. And I know that we have other Pacific issues, other Pacifica issues that we're concerned of, but the idea that people are being killed every day, that sounds like an emergency to me. The idea that these indigenous people had declared sovereignty way back in the 1960s, and decades later, decades later, it's still not being recognized. That sounds like a disservice, the greatest disservice. So I hope that the West Papua issue does get priority. I know that our Micronesian nations are raising awareness on climate change. So I know that's a competing interest that's happening at the UN talks. But I don't think that it would be too much to also include Free West Papua. I don't think that these issues cancel each other out. If anything, they both sound like emergency issues to be raised. And just because we're Pacific people, and for some who might interpret us as poor and therefore irrelevant, I don't think that makes us unimportant. I know that does not make us unimportant. And so I do hope for the best for West Papua.
I do hope so too. I don't know. I know Annie has brought it up in Congress, yeah. And I think
that was a big deal.
Yeah, it really is. So I think we did our part yes. by putting the word out there, and yes. I think they're really thankful that we're doing this for them. And I wouldn't do anything, to hurt their intention of wanting the to become sovereign in their own nation. I just, I don't know if we want to bring this topic, talk about this topic later on in the future, but it's interesting because you think about it, it started back in the 1940s when it really became an issue. And, it was really brought to the attention of the international community. And it's been years and years. I just think, it gets to that point.
We took this opportunity to hear from our brother from West Papua about West Papua. And we've included it in our list of topics for our show. And I think that will, help spread the word.
I think so too. I think we're gonna, we did our part. We've had the opportunity to talk about this issue in FICA podcast with Polynesia Poly by Design, and we have this great opportunity to have our own show and sort of elaborate more on this issue. It's becoming I think it's well known. It's done its course of letting the international community, not just in the Pacific region, but it's an international community where they're aware of what's going on. It's just a matter of whoever it is that's in charge or has to something has to be done. And I look forward to that day when it's something that is progressively done to help out the people of West Papua.
Thank you for listening. Please join us for our next episode on Pacifica Issues Podcast.